This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Greg Down, President and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest and most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Greg Down next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 530 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Few commodities have seen such dramatic cyclical swings in profit and loss than dairy. Greg Down, President and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation, says dairy farmers for now are keeping their head above water.
We're kind of nose water right above our mouth, below our nose here somewhere. We've got a little bit of margin in this thing. You've got to be on your toes to make sure you don't get caught on the wrong side of the skim milk powder market or the butter market or things that are going on here. But I think, you know, we've got a lot of solids, a lot of cream out there. And that's a function of genetics, function of doing a better job on the feeding side of the equation, but it's also a function of these cows are a little older. And all this ties into beef on dairy. Beef on dairy, when I say this, we're using sex semen, so we're only breeding, let's say, the top 25% of our herd for replacement heifers that are, you know, the dairy breed. So we're breeding the rest of them to Angus or a genetic cross that produces a really high value beef carcass. A year or two ago, that day old calf was worth $1,100 or $1,200. Just came back from our annual meeting last week. The number I heard last week, $1,500 for that black day old calf. Jeff, that's somewhere around, milk is worth, $20 a hundredweight right now. That black day old calf is $2 to $3 a hundredweight on top of that. So we're talking about, somewhere around 15% of the value of what you're doing is in that calf and also in that cool cow. So that's really what's carrying us right now in the dairy industry.
The carryover support, the strength that we're seeing in the beef market that is spilling into dairy, and that wasn't always the case.
That was never, you go back 10 years and that Holstein bull was on a good day worth $50. And sometimes nobody wanted him.
So now let's talk about the price of milk and the price of the product that you're offering. You've been through swings, and the Department of Agriculture is just, now that the lights are back on in Washington, there is some sign up for producers to be able to see some compensation for the time that there was no place for that milk.
Yeah, we're going to be right on the edge of that, I think, a little bit. But what I would, first of all, let's talk about the Federal Milk Marketing Order modernization that occurred this year. After 25 years, we finally got everything updated in terms of components and make allowances and everything else. Class one differential. People that don't understand the dairy industry, this is a unbelievably complicated thing. There's an old adage in Washington, there aren't five people in Washington that understand how milk is priced. I can assure you that's true. It is a very unique thing, which is why it took an enormous effort to update all of this. But I will tell you that has made a huge difference for the dairy industry now here in terms of getting things right economically in the industry, where you're the processor's getting a margin, the farmer. We've got one more thing to implement here in terms of changing the component prices to make it reflect what's going on in the marketplace. The class one differentials put quite a bit of money back in the farmer's pocket here this year. There's a little bit of give and take, a little bit of winning and losing, depending on where you are around the country. But the good news is the implementation of this has gone really, really well.
There was the period of time that we were talking about
the conclusion of the FMMO.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be a farm bill.
Yes.
Well, you got the federal mill marketing order. You got that done. You still don't have the farm bill. Was there anything in H.R. 1 that has helped to parallel to the milk marketing order? Or are there things still on the table that you need that will further settle the water?
So we got an extension in terms of the programs to 2031 in the big, beautiful bill. So that was the key thing we needed done. The other thing we need is some money for the cost study in terms of we've got to continually update these costs of the processing, everything else to get the make allowance number right. That's not a critical thing right now, but whether we get it done in a probes or get it done here in a CR or something like that, we keep pressing on this where we get it done in a farm bill. That'd be a nice thing. We need a little bit of money to get that done. But otherwise we're in good shape.
So at your meeting with the different groups that came together, were there common themes and common priorities?
Yeah.
Among producers?
The unbelievable priority right now is labor. And this immigration topic, it was by far the thing that everybody wanted to talk about. It was you know, Secretary Rollins was at our meeting. She mentioned it in our conversations with her. This was the key thing that we really emphasized to her. She understands this. The president understands this. Secretary of Labor Chavez Dreamer is working on this. It was great discussions. But here's the issue: they're working on reforming H-2A. H-2A is a seasonal program for seasonal laborers.
Mm-hmm.
On the dairy farm, we're milking cows three times a day, 365 days a year. We are not seasonal. We don't have a program in dairy. We don't have a program that provides visas for farm workers that are year-round. The processing, meat processing industry has their programs. H-2A has their program. We're a man without a country on the dairy side of the equation. And in the first thing the folks in the administration will say, rightfully so, is that, well, Congress has to address this. Well, I've had these conversations with members of Congress. They all acknowledge it. G.T. Thompson is working on this right now. Couldn't think of anybody possibly better than him to work on this issue right now for us on ag labor and dairy specifically. But what's the thing I get back from Capitol Hill, Jeff? Oh, we got to wait until after the midterms. Well, there's a reason we haven't done this. Now, next year will be 40 years, 1986.
Mm-hmm.
It's because nobody wants to get out in front of this. The president's got to send the signal. We're ready to go on this. We got to get this done here. Everybody understands this is an issue for dairy. Everybody gets it. Everybody knows, you know, the GT is working on this. But we've got to get off the snide here and get going. And so we're all looking at each other saying, okay, who's going to take the first step?
What does it take to focus down on agriculture? Because the produce industry needs it, the dairy industry, other livestock. The agriculture has a clear need. So what's the lid in front of it, or what is it included in that prevents us from being able to provide what agriculture needs? Because the produce industry we're talking about, we're not raising the crops that we used to, or we plant a crop that we can't harvest. We're losing money. Bob Stallman, former president of the American Farm Bureau, said we're either going to import people to work or we're going to import food.
That was just where I was going to go. That is exactly right. So you've talked to members of Congress. They get it. But none of them – well, first of all, let's say the excuse for so many years was, well, we got to wait until the border's secure. Well, okay, can we say that now? I think we can say, okay, we're there. And members of Congress acknowledge that. So now they're saying, okay, we don't want to get out in front of the president on this. We need a signal from him that it's okay to proceed on this. And I think there's a whole group of folks that would be ready to roll on this. So that the answer to your question, Jeff, is I think that's what we're waiting on. We're waiting for the president of the United States to say, you know what, it's time. Let's go.
So Secretary Rollins was at your meeting and she talked about it. So
she did.
What did she say that was in the way of it?
Well, I think it's this, you know, political inertia of what do we want to talk about this? We want to talk about this. We know we got to deal with this. When is exactly the right time to do this? We're all kind of dancing around looking at each other right now, trying to figure out when that is. You know, from my part as the guy in Washington for dairy farmers, I'm just going to whip and spur. I'm going to say, let's go. We got to get this done. Time is of the essence.
How have the ICE raids impacted the dairy industry?
Initially, this was something that really upset my membership. And that is the fact that these were folks on some of these dairy farms that had worked for these producers for 10 or 15 years. And the way this works, Jeff, is the fact that you're allowed to take a driver's license and social security number, and you look at it. And if it looks legit, you can't ask any questions. Say, well, where did you get this? What? No. That's not a lot. You get yourself in a whole bunch of different kind of trouble if you do that. So you say, well, this looks good. You know, you sign them up and you put them on the payroll and everything. And that's the way it was for 10 or 15 years. And all of a sudden ICE comes in and they say, well, we want to do an I-9 audit. We want to audit, you know, all of this. And they come back and say, you know, let's say you have 20 employees on this dairy, and they come back and say, yeah, but you got three guys over here that aren't, the paperwork isn't right, it wasn't legit, it was fraudulent or whatever. The farmer has no way of knowing that. And all of a sudden ICE comes on their place and everybody scatters. And then how are you going to get the cows milked? This has happened in quite a few places around the country, and it's been a huge problem.
How is the industry positioned for growth?
So 2023, 24, 25, 26, $11 billion. A new dairy processing investment in the U.S. And I'm not talking about pie in the sky. We're talking about it's coming. These are plants that have been built and are operational. The Hillmar plant in Kansas, cheese plant. So that's been operational here now for a little over a year, 13 months now, I think. You've got a new Fairlife, you know, new technology, ultra filtered, new Fairlife plant coming in the Northeast here, I think online in January. You've got, Chobani, over $1 billion in new investment in New York, $500 million in Idaho. All total $11 billion. What this is an investment in the U.S. dairy farmer. The entire world knows that growth in dairy is going to come in the United States. This money and this investment is coming a little bit from, overseas. It's coming a little bit from proprietary firms. A big chunk of it is coming from the co-op side of the farmer-owned co-op side of the equation. And also a big chunk is coming from farmers that are building their own processing facilities. So it's interesting to see. It's not just one group of folks that are investing. It's investment across the board in the dairy industry, $11 billion worth. I've never, in my career, Jeff, I've never seen anything like that in any ag commodity anywhere in the world, what we have going on in dairy right now.
So for the companies that sell to consumers, Walmart, Kroger, others, how have they impacted the industry?
Well, that to me, when you say that, I'm saying that looks fluid milkish to me. I'm talking about the Chobanis and the Fairlifes. You know, Coca-Cola owns Fairlife now. When I go out and give speeches out in farm country, you should do this, Jeff. I say two words, and then I'd say, all right, all you guys, watch your wives, watch the women in the audience. I'm going to say two words. You ready? Cottage cheese. And the reaction is, oh, why? Because every recipe in social media right now, cottage cheese is the hottest thing going. Why? It is all about protein. Everywhere in the world right now, if you look at the demand for protein in the world versus the supply, we can barely keep up. So whether it's beef, pork, poultry, or dairy, you know, the best, cheapest source of protein in the world, I would argue, isn't poultry or vegetable based. It's dairy. And that's why when you talk about the dietary guidelines, you talk about all the new research that the Dairy Checkoff is doing with the Mayo Clinic, looking specifically at vitamin A, vitamin D, all the different things that milk provides. Specifically, what does that do in terms of human health? And why is that so doggone important? It's game-changing in terms of helping people understand the value of dairy in their diet.
So a health-conscious consumer and a consumer that is working toward better nutrition is playing into the opportunity that the dairy industry can provide.
We've always been there. It's just a matter of helping people understand it. And there's constantly new research, new technology, new products going into that as well.
Dietary guidelines and MAHA. Mm-hmm. One and then the other. Thoughts?
I think, you know, it's the term that I've used all year has been, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. Because I think in terms of dairy and the dietary guidelines, it's going to be a great benefit to us. But I think you also have to understand that RFK Jr. is a little bit of a thing in terms of what would be the word I would use. You know, he's a magnet for, well, he's an anti-vaxxer. He's this or he's this, and can you really trust him? We've got to make sure that people understand that in terms of dairy, the science is solid on this. You know, we said, well, all these years, saturated fat is bad for you. But what does all the science say today? Well, actually, saturated fat and dairy is a very, very different thing. You can't lump that in together with all this. It's actually, you know, good for the, all things together. It's better, dairy is better for you than a lot of other things. I think, this administration is all about that. And it's about time.
The first Maha report might have neglected science, but the second seemed to embrace science a bit better. I think many would hope that the goal of making America healthy would include science-based conclusions.
I think we'll just have to see where they end up here. Do I have any details yet? I don't. But I like what I'm hearing. I like what I'm picking up. I like what I'm seeing from the nutrition community overall on this.
If there is a debate about sustainability or regenerative agriculture, does dairy have a seat at the table aside from the digesters that are more prominent now than before?
Great question. And the answer is the dairy industry is absolutely at the tip of the spear on this topic. So through the Dairy Checkoff, we invested years ago in the farm program, which was originally for animal care. And so we now have 99% of the dairy herd in the U.S. that has specific guidelines that every farmer has to meet in terms of animal care. We also here a few years ago began to implement the farm ES environmental stewardship side of the equation. We began building models and working with land grant universities on understanding methane and all of these different things in terms of, the production side of the equation, the milk side of the equation, the transportation side of the equation. What is the overall life cycle analysis, the footprint look like? We are way out ahead of everybody else in this in agriculture. As the new guy coming in, I was shocked to see where we are on this. The modeling, and now we have, just in the last year, we updated to the third version of this. We've got 1,000 farmers just in the last year that have gone through this, put in their data in terms of how much electricity they use, how much fuel, water, et cetera, and we plugged all this into a model. The next iteration of this, they came to me and said, Greg, we need more computing capability. We need bigger computers. We're getting more sophisticated in how to model this. That's the questions that I get asked of, what is the next iteration of this with AI? We're going to be able to use what we have now and plug in and say how to play with, well, if I do this, what does it really mean in terms of sustainability and all this stuff? What, not only, you know, the cost, but what do I get back? And how do I make this, you know, far more efficient? And that's where these feed additives like Bovaer and methane-reducing additives, we're using artificial intelligence to say, here's the genetics of the animal, here's their feed we're using, what combination of these different additives that can we use, not just to reduce methane, but to increase productivity. And what we're learning in terms of this modeling is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I mean, we are really learning a lot day to day about this topic in our industry.
Key fundamentals that make good dairy. There's so many that a dairy farmer is skilled at. Nutrition has got to be one, and genetics has to be another. With regard to nutrition, you just mentioned Bovaer. Is the regulatory system in Washington up to date that would provide feed additives, that would provide elements that would help producers be more productive, more sustainable?
The definitive answer to that is no, which is why we've introduced in Congress the Feed Act to press FDA on this issue. This is the great challenge that we have in agriculture today. We have all these billions of dollars that have been spent on new technology in agriculture. But if we can't get our government to approve these technologies from a regulatory standpoint where we can commercialize them so the people that have spent the money on investment can get a return on investment, what's going to happen, Jeff? This money's going to go somewhere else. It's going to go to another country or a different industry, and we're going to be left, you know, in a very stagnant situation in U.S. agriculture. The technology to make us better and more efficient, more healthy, is we're using new and better stuff every day. That's better for the environment. It's better for everything. But we have to have the government approve this. You're spot on in that point. It is something that we talk about all the time from our position in Washington.
Julie Callahan.
Julie Callahan is one of the smartest people I know. Let me tell you about Julie. I was the one that promoted her, part of promoting her into her current position. She has a degree in chemistry from MIT. She has a PhD in chemistry from Boston College, and she speaks Mandarin. She is unbelievably the best possible person on earth we've had in our government for the last many years is the head career professional. I have really mixed feelings about seeing her make the jump onto the political side of the equation, but in terms of time and place and the person, there isn't anybody better.
USMCA is set for review.
Yeah.
Do we break it apart and just have a deal with Mexico and a deal with Canada? Or this time in reviewing USMCA, will the Canadians come across and provide the access for U.S. dairy that has been promised?
So, I think it all stays together. This is the big thing has always been about rules of origin and autos, and sorting that out to make the industry work well in North America. On the dairy side of the equation, we have to, you know, Mexico's our best market. Works really, really well. The dairy industry in Mexico is growing. Our dairy industry is growing. Trade is growing. Everyone is benefiting there on the dairy side with Mexico. Great relationship. With Canada, they're still our second best market. So we have to be a little careful there to say everything is broken. It's not everything is broken. We have one little sentence in terms of how they administer their tariff rate quotas, that they're not doing it the way they're supposed to be doing it. They know that. We know that. We've got to sit down and get this sorted out.
You've been involved deeply in trade. One more question before we move on. What do you interpret from the meeting between President Trump and President Xi as it relates to agricultural trade between the two countries, and how will this unfold?
Well, so my perspective on this is pretty unique. You know, I spent a year of my life in 2019, 33 negotiating sessions, hundreds of hours with the Vice Minister of Agriculture of China, who is now the Minister of Agriculture of China. Extraordinary discussion, historic discussion. We fixed 57 things in our ag trade relationship between the U.S. and China. We took U.S. ag exports from 26 to 38 billion as a result of all that. Was it the 40 billion that was agreed to? No, but it was the closest of anybody. We were, you know, we did really, really well. What most people need to understand is from the day that agreement was signed until the rest of the administration, we were talking to China every day. We had a rapport. We had a relationship. We were fixing things, which is exactly what you should expect of the two biggest economies in the world. They have to talk to each other. They have to work together. And then all of a sudden one day, it all went away. There wasn't another conversation for 4 years. And now change again. And all of a sudden we're banging on their door again saying, hey, this isn't right. The Chinese are like, wait a minute. U.S., what are you doing? You went from one extreme to the other, back again. What's going on here? Are you interested in having a relationship or not? You know, a little bit of this is on us. They don't understand our politics of changes in administration and all that. We haven't been consistent at all. So now we've got to go back and get this thing back on track. And it's just a matter of sitting down and saying, hey, look, we're going to hold you to this. Well, the Chinese expect that. We just didn't do it.
Greg Dowd, thank you for your time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. It's Open Mic, and our guest always has the last word.
The last word, Jeff, is optimism. I know things in Washington right now are a mess. These guys are at each other's throats. It's a really challenging time. But for agriculture, despite all the ups and downs, you know, we've got a lot of pressure from Brazil. We've got a lot of supply in corn and soybeans. But I like to be optimistic, and I look at, I'm not as optimistic as G.T. Thompson, by the way, but I am optimistic. Of, you know, beef, pork, poultry, dairy. We've got to move up the value chain on the protein side of the equation. We've got to change our business model here in U.S. agriculture a little bit to do that, plus the biofuel side of the equation. That's where the future is. This is where we've got to go, and nobody in the world can touch us in these areas if we get after it.
Greg Dev, thank you.
Yes, sir. Pleasure.
Our thanks to Greg Dowd, President and CEO of the National Milk Producers Federation. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest and most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.